Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. There are few people who do not have a strong opinion about Martha Stewart. Some see her as the purveyor of unnecessarily glittered pine cones and homemade soaps. Others devoutly follow her teachings as to the wisdom of an alphabetized spice rack or how to make the perfect roast duck with caramelized parsnips, if such things even exist. And then, of course, there are those who just can't forget Martha Stewart's time behind bars for charges related to insider trading. Writer Jen Lancaster holds all of these opinions of Ms. Stewart and loves her all the more for it. Moved by Martha's organization, creativity, and spunk, Lancaster decided to emulate the homemaking maven. She documents the effort in the new book, The Tao of Martha, My Year of Living, or Why I'm Never Getting All That Glitter Off the Dog. She tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce why she decided to channel her inner Martha.
What inspired me was having a really terrible 2011. Not for any big reason, just a lot of first world stupid problems. So because I had a bad 2011, by the time the end of the year rolled around, I didn't even want to acknowledge Christmas. That just seemed like one more thing that I had to do. So I told my husband, we're going to skip Christmas this year. We're just going to go right into 2012, and that's all there is to it. He thought about it, and he agreed. Then he thought about it and decided, no, that's not what we're going to do. We're going to flip 2011, the biggest burden in the entire world, and we're going to have a huge celebration. So we got guys to put lights in the front of the house, and we had this big holiday party. I was responsible for doing all of the food prep for the holiday party, and I thought, we'll have a big Italian buffet. I'll make my special bolognese sauce recipe. So where all of this is going is it took me 3.5 hours tearing my house apart to find this stupid recipe because 6 months earlier, I had my school's alumni magazine came up to interview me, and I wanted them to think that I kept a neat house, so I shoved all the crap from my counters into cabinets. And it turns out that my bolognese sauce recipe was in our kitchen gun cabinet. We didn't install it. We just happened to have a kitchen gun cabinet. And the thing that started this entire book was when my husband made the comment, I wonder if Martha Stewart stashes her crap in her kitchen gun cabinet.
Now, first, I want to have you tell us about your relationship with Martha Stewart.
My relationship with Martha Stewart now is very good. In the past, before she went to prison, I didn't like her. I didn't care for her. I thought she was smug. What made me turn around to Team Martha is how she behaved in and after prison. She went there. She made friends. She made microwave dinners. She made ponchos. She really rose to the occasion because she could have gone in and then just gone anonymous after that. But she came back and reclaimed the name Martha Stewart and proceeded as though nothing ever happened. I began to respect that. And I think I was also, when she got out of prison, at the point in my life where making a nice home became important and learning to cook became important. So what she did began to coincide with what I wanted to accomplish.
What reaction to this idea for this project of living a year in the style of Martha Stewart, what reaction did you get from other people, most especially your husband, Fletch?
Well, my husband thought this was the greatest possible thing to ever happen in our entire lives. Like a few years ago, I decided to take on this year-long weight loss project. So for a year, all I did was stomp around the house swearing and angry every time I saw him eating a piece of pie. So that was not one of his more favorite book projects. But for this one, the house was spotless. Things became organized. I cooked all the time. I decorated. We had parties. He thought this was phenomenal. He said that this book is 18 years of everything he's been trying to get me to be. So he was thrilled. My friends were a little bit more dubious because a lot of these guys I knew in college, and they remember me, hemming my kitchen curtains with a steak knife. So they did not think that I would be able to attain Martha Stewart's lifestyle.
Well, what were the lifestyle aspects you were trying to emulate and bring into yours?
I wanted to concentrate on the areas that were really relevant to my life. I wasn't looking at this as a stunt project. I honestly was looking at this as a happiness project. I had this beautiful pit bull named Maisie, and 3.5, 4 years ago, she was diagnosed with mast cell tumors. Her vet said she had 6 months. She lasted another 3.5 years. And I knew that we were going to lose her last year. So what I wanted to do was find a way to stockpile some happiness because I knew that at some point last year I would have a really rough go of it. So that's the reason behind this book. So I decided to concentrate on things that were meaningful to me. Like, Martha can tell you how to build your own chicken coop. That's not something I'm going to do. That's not something that's going to enhance my quality of life. But figuring out how to throw a party where I actually got to spend time with my guests and enjoy them and not think the entire time they're there, get out. All I'm going to do is wash your dishes. I mean, that was important to me. It was important to me to be able to make dinners on the fly. It was important for me to keep things organized. So those are the areas in which I concentrated.
What were some of the tasks that you took on, the Martha-inspired projects, that came more easily versus some that you maybe struggled with a little bit?
The first task that I took on that came easily was planning an Easter. And I thought it was going to go very, very well. But to begin, see, it went horribly wrong and horribly right. To begin, my husband and I were going to hollow out Easter eggs and then dip them, and then we would have painted Easter eggs. And that's something that I haven't done in, at least 30 years. So normally we are food snobs, and we normally buy the free-range, organic, non-bee-cut eggs that are $6 a carton, and they make fried eggs very precious. But for this one, I went with the dollar eggs, and I'm sorry that these chickens weren't hugged and cuddled. I'm sorry. I feel bad. So we started to hollow them out. Every time we tried to drill a hole in it, they would explode in such a spectacular fashion. There were just sunbursts of yolks on my ceiling. And then, see, again, I thought I had it together because I had a plan. So when I went to put the tablecloth on the table, it turns out the only one we had that fit was still covered in bolognese sauce stains. So I had to use a shorter tablecloth and a longer tablecloth, and it turned into like this tablecloth mullet. But it was okay, and I put these big vases of apple blossoms out, and it looked so beautiful, and I had it all staged, ready to get up the next morning and just cook the food for the brunch. And in the night, my cats knocked over all of the apple blossoms. So my one remaining tablecloth was just saturated. I had post-it notes on everything, so those bled into the tablecloth. And this is what taught me that Martha Stewart was more than just the sum of her parts. There was an actual Tao of her way of doing things. And the first Tao lesson I learned from this is to always have a contingency plan. Now, if I had 3 or 4 white tablecloths, I could have cleaned everything up and started over, and it would have been no problem. Instead, it was me swearing and sweating and having my husband run over the table with the hairdryer.
You said before that you embarked upon this as a kind of happiness project. Where did the happiness come in? Because it sounds like there was a lot of frustration as well.
The happiness came in from learning to do things. For example, one of the things that I took on was knitting. I knew that I had to do a crafting component for this book somehow, and there's a lot of crafts out there that I have no desire to do. Apparently sewing, not my thing. I'm always afraid that I'm going to run over my fingers when I press the little gas pedal thing. But what did work for me was knitting. So I thought, oh, this will be really hilarious if I knit everybody in my life a scarf for Christmas. They don't have to be good. I just have to do it and say that I did it. What I didn't realize is how much I would love knitting. And the thing is, when you make a handmade gift for someone, my failing was in thinking that handmade gifts are equal to cheap. Each of the scarves I made took anywhere from $60 to $100 worth of yarn, number one, coupled with my time. So these things are worth about $8,000 each. I mean, you could get a used Honda for one of my scarves. What was unexpected and just so delightful was the amount of time I thought about each person for whom I was making the gifts. One of my friends has really blue eyes, so I was making the scarf thinking, this will pull out the blue in her eyes, and this will be gorgeous. And everybody loved these things, and I did not expect the praise that I got from doing this project. That was awesome.
Did you find your relationships were affected as you were going through this project?
This process has made me a more thoughtful person, and that's probably about the best thing that's come of it. For example, I was getting ready to leave for book tour about a month ago, and one of my friends had major surgery, and I knew I wasn't going to be here. She's single, so she doesn't have anyone who lives with her to help her, and I knew I wanted to do something to make things easier for her. So because of Martha, I learned how to budget my time. So even though I was getting ready for book tour, I was able to take a couple of weekends and make 10 different pre-made things for her. So when she was in her house, she could have chicken soup, she could have chicken enchiladas, she could have meatballs. So I had all of these meals pre-made for her. And I think before I had done this project, I wouldn't have known the time management skills to do this. I wouldn't have been thoughtful like this, and I wouldn't have had the skill. And because of this book, I was able to do something really nice for someone who is important to me.
Where were the points of departure between what you were doing, really doing in life, and what Martha says to do?
Well, one of the major points of departure was our 4th of July party. And I talked about my dog, and right before the 4th of July party, she took a terrible turn, and we really thought that we were going to lose her. So we proceeded with the party because I needed something to focus on. And somehow in my anxiety and in my grief, the classy 4th of July party where everyone would wear their Madras shorts and eat lobster with drawn butter turned into this redneck hee-haw hoedown. And I think that happened the minute that I bought the Founding Father rubber duckies on Amazon. And the other thing about that is, like, the month of July, I wanted to follow Martha's planning calendar. In her magazines, she has this calendar. On this day, you deadhead the roses. On this day, you do this. So I started to follow her calendar. And on July 3rd, the only thing on her calendar was to take a swim and to go antiquing. On nowhere did it said, call the emergency vet 400 times to find out about your dog. It didn't say, make 9,000 runs to Costco and 16 runs to the grocery store because it's 100 degrees out and all the ice in the cooler is melting the second you open it. So I got mad at Martha and I started to call her smug. She and I, in my head, are cool now, but I was not a fan of hers in July.
So it seems to me that part of the philosophy, the Tao of Martha, is recognizing where your limitations are, where your time is best spent, and what you want to do that will make you happy versus what maybe other people expect of you.
Exactly. That is the perfect description. What I found out more than anything was that I have to try. There were so many things in my life that I'd never done because it seemed hard, so I never tried, like making cheesecake. Cheesecake seemed like the hardest thing in the entire world because it requires a special pan and a water bath, and it seemed so daunting. But once I did it, I realized how easy it was. So now I'm never going to be a sucker paying $25 for a pre-made cheesecake when I can do it at home for $4 and have it be delicious with no artificial preservatives. So it's one of those things that I can do to make my friends happy, my family happy, to save money, which really hits a number of my parameters that I was hoping for in this book.
Do you think your readers would be surprised that this philosophy is about more than glittering pine cones? That maybe Martha Stewart has more to her than the kind of maybe superficial aspects of decorating and finding the perfect window treatment?
I think that this is really inspiring my readers to take a look at their lives and figure out what's not working and improve on it.
Jen Lancaster, thank you so much for coming in and sharing what you learned from Martha Stewart with us.
Thank you so much.
Jen Lancaster's latest book is The Tao of Martha, My Year of Living, or Why I'm Never Getting All That Glitter Off the Dog. She spoke with Stephanie Lecce before a recent reading at the Barnes & Noble in Wauwatosa. There is a link to her website called Gensylvania from WUWM.com. That's all for the Wednesday edition of Lake Effect. Tomorrow on the show, a couple of perspectives on the crisis in Syria, and we'll take a virtual audio trip to the moons of Neptune. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect. From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.